across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Phil Rowe.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now, if I said the species name Lutra lutra, who would know out there what would be the commonly known name? It is the otter. And after a dramatic decline in population in the 1950s to the 1970s, due to pollution with organochloride insecticides and hunting by man, the otter, I'm pleased to say, is now increasing in numbers again. It largely catches sedentary fish like eels and pike. Now, I know pike are big fish, and for an otter to take on a pike, well, we'll find out more about that, I'm sure. They can be seen locally, otters. And to tell us more about our local otters, Peter Pilbeam is here. He's chair of the Cambridgeshire Mammal Group and also their training officer. Very good morning to you, Peter. Nice to have you on board.
Good morning. Thanks for having me along.
You used to be at the University of Cambridge, been retired for some little while. Were you a naturalist studying at the university?
No, I was an HR specialist when I retired. And previous to that, I was a chief technician in biochemistry.
Okay. So this really has become, well, I suppose the third age for you in a way, outside of a completely different world when you were working.
Yes, I was interested from perhaps 40 years ago, but unfortunately I didn't come to it until relatively late. I wasn't brought up as a naturalist by my dad or anything like that, so it's all come rather later.
Do you find, when a young person, I suppose, and a young person today, and I can understand that, I stand on the railway platform this morning, everybody's got their heads in their smartphones, I'm the same, but probably as I get a bit older, I start looking around me, and I see this time of year's, in the ornithological world, seeing the number of jackdaws in the sky, because at this time of year, they're a bit like starlings when they murmurate, you see so many of the jackdaws doing that, and it is a thing that they do late winter. And you start noticing things about your garden that you didn't before, and the way the American grey squirrels behave, because I've got some very noisy ones, I have to say, Peter, in my garden. And so we come round to maybe appreciating the natural world around us more when we get old. I like to think so. I think I do. I think I'm watching more natural history programmes than I used to. So David Attenborough and Winter Watch, of course, which was on last week. I find some of the content fascinating. I'm sure you do. Is that how you first got into the natural world?
To be honest, I don't know. I know I was, when I was first a warden of a nature reserve near Wilburton, I took one of my small children along with her first boyfriend, I think, and we were treated to a weasel chasing a mouse across a pond. And they didn't...
Across a pond?
They didn't realise how rare it was to see this sort of thing.
And they just swimming too, because I wouldn't have thought that...
Well, the stoat was more like running across the top, because stoats do move rather quickly. And the kids didn't appreciate it. They didn't realise that they'd seen something pretty unusual to actually be able to witness. But mobile phones.
Yes.
Mobile phones are actually quite useful nowadays. If people come across a mammal mapper app from the Mammal Society, that's very useful for recording mammals that you see and where they are, because they've got automatic GPS systems in. And that mammal mapper app is exceptionally useful for recording mammals. Very handy for the Mammal Society and for my group.
So a naturalist has located, for instance, a stoat, a weasel, maybe we're going to talk about otters in a minute, knows where they saw them, is GPS positioned, uploaded then into the app. So if I come along, not really know. Oh, what did I spot then? Did I, was it a stoat? Was it a weasel, for instance? Because I'm trying to tell the difference between the two. I know one is thinner and longer than the other. But I might be able to go to this app. Would I see a picture to try to identify?
Not that way. The app records, but if you want to know what you've seen, then try and get a picture of it and send it to I think it's an app. It's called iSpot. That will give you an answer.
Yeah.
There are various. If you put a picture on the web and say, what's this? Somebody will reply.
Is there an app out there that, when you get a sound from the countryside, and I know my wife, he lived in London for many years, again, going back to birds, but the golden pheasant, she had never heard a golden pheasant. When she moved to semi-rural area of sort of outer conurbation of Cambridge, and we walked just a little bit further out, and there was the chatter of the golden pheasant with the male with the call. And she said, "What's that?" You know, the chirr-chirr sound of the pheasant. And she did not know what that was. Is there an app where you can record the sound of the bird and it will actually tell you what you're listening to?
That I'm not sure about, not being a birder. But there are umpteen applications on the web and from various groups like Bird Guides and the RSPB who produce catalogues of bird songs and bird pictures. Lots of them.
We'll move to the otter now. That's, after all, what you're here to talk about this morning, Peter, from the Cambridgeshire Mammal Group, and that being, of course, one of those which I suppose is famous. If we were sitting here 35 years ago, we'd be probably almost ruining the lament of the otter, and now we can say with a certain degree that it's a success story. They're coming back, breeding pairs. From where we are right now in Gwydir Street, really central Cambridge, how far away from where we are sitting right now, Peter, would you say would be the nearest otter to us?
Oh, within 2 miles.
Really?
Now, whether it's living there or just sign of them appears, certainly signs appear within a couple of miles, occasionally within a mile of where we are.
You see, people living in Cambridge, I don't know, is it just me and my ignorance? I live in the sort of outer suburbs. But would they really be surprised this morning? I am, to know that an otter is amongst us here in Cambridge. It's pleasantly surprised.
I think they would be. We've had various reports of very occasional sightings, but we do see sign, which is spraint, which are their droppings, which they use as markers. You can see that, you can see spraint. If you go along the towpath under the A14 bridge of the Cam, there's always spraint on the towpath there on the concrete.
Now, would they be seen during the day, generally?
No, not often. Very rare. Unless you happen to go to the Shetlands or the Ardnamurchan Peninsula in Scotland.
Well, I was on the Norfolk Broads, a little bit further away in East Anglia, and I was on one of these cruiser boats. I had to say, you know, pollution or otherwise, but there we were, the pair of us on a Norfolk Broads holiday, something we said we'd never do, but we thoroughly enjoyed. And we tried to keep, you know, our speed down and stop the washing the banks. And I was on the bow of the boat, because at the front is where I was navigating from. My wife was on the stern. An otter! By the time she shouted, I just about saw the ripple in the water. And it's the only time that either of us has seen an otter. I still have not seen an otter in the wild, and I'd love to do that. And to know that actually they're just under the A14 bridge or nearby, and that part of Fendittin sometimes, marvellous.
Yeah, well, I personally have never seen a live wild otter in the county. I've seen dozens up in the Shetlands and in Ardnamurchan. I've dealt with a number of dead ones in the county, but I personally have never seen a live one in the county, and neither have a number of my members. Admittedly, we're a mammal group, not an otter group.
Yes.
But there was one of our members lives in Barrington, saw one last year for the first time ever, and he'd never seen one before either.
And that's in the upper reaches of the River Cam, presumably? On the Rees?
Yeah, it must be the Rees, I think.
Yeah, which is which springs up out of the ground in Barrington, of course. So quite a long way away from a main body of water, then.
Oh, yeah, they can be on very small, I was going to say very small rivers, but small water bodies they can be, yes. Certainly they are seen at Paxton Pits, which are quite big lakes, Wicken Fen, Foulmere. They are seen and photographed there very occasionally, not very often. Where there is less disturbance by people, they will come out more often anyway. But they don't like people, which is a good thing.
And they like darkness, because they're nocturnal.
They obviously prefer dusk and dawn, yeah.
I was just thinking, if they're in smaller areas, how they can sustain themselves on food sources.
Well, there's plenty of fish about, particularly now that rivers and water bodies are generally much cleaner. Since, as you were saying, the 60s, 70s and 80s, there is more to eat, basically. And they are not averse to raiding the odd fish farm, but this does not go down well with the fishing fraternity.
Of course.
But there are simple ways of dealing with that without much expense.
And the female otter is very territorial. She will often claim, in inverted commas, about 12 kilometres of a river stretch all to her own.
Yes, they can do. That will go with the availability of food as well. And, of course, a male otter's territory will possibly cover several female otters, and male otters will travel up and down rivers far more often and far more wide-ranging than female otters will.
Young, now they have, I think, kits, isn't it, as they're young, is that right?
Probably, I can never remember that.
Otter kit, is that the name of the otter? How many do they have normally?
Two to three, perhaps. Yeah. I think certainly have three.
And mum brings them up for about a year.
Yes.
Before they
stick around with mother quite tight, actually. The ones I've seen in Ardnamurchan and the Shetlands, they are very close to mum for months while they're being taught to live, basically.
And one day, I guess, the mother starts denying them some food sources or catches, stops teaching them and says, you know, time for you to disappear.
Well, if food is doing well and the weather's good, then she may well come into season earlier than normal-ish, and then we'll push the children away, ready for another male to come by.
Right. And the gentleman of the otter fraternity in all of this, does he do his procreate? We're talking about procreation earlier on. Does he do his bit and then disappear then, Peter? Does he have any part in parenting?
No, he does very little parenting, if any. And, of course, if he comes upon a female with cubs in close by, he may well deal with the cubs, may well have a go at the cubs, and mother will, up to a point, die to protect them.
There's
he will not
that.
Recognise his own cubs, as far as we know.
Interesting. In the world of hedgehogs, we know that the father will do just that. He'll father some urchins or hoglets, as they're sometimes called, and then he'll take no part in looking after the youngsters. It's mum's job.
Interesting attitude.
It is, isn't it? But that's the law of nature.
Well, they are cubs in the book, by the way.
They're cubs,
yep.
Not kids.
No.
Well, I don't know where they got that one from. So, otter cubs. See what we're learning as we're going on.
One thing to point out, I think, about your sighting or your wife's sighting on the Broads, don't forget they are confusable with mink. It's not that difficult to confuse a mink with an otter if you see it quickly, if it's dark or dusk, if it's under leaves on the other side of the river, if you don't get much of a view. They are quite different, particularly in size. I don't think people realise that an otter is probably three times the size and weight of a mink, if not more, but they are confusable if you don't get a reasonable view.
And the mink, Peter, not a native species. It was brought here for farming in the days when we had pelts and skins and people wanted to wear fur minks, and they escaped.
Well, unfortunately, in this country, they didn't grow, because the weather's better than it is in North America, in this country, they didn't grow as good a fur as they ought to have done to make fur coats. So they were inviable as a fur animal anyway. And then they were released by animal rights people as well, and lots escaped. And the farmers eventually found it, up to a point, cheaper to let them go than shoot them after they were labelled invasive species and able to be dispatched.
The other invasive species that's quite famous in the Fens was the coypew.
Yes.
Now, they have been eradicated.
Ah, yes, but we did have a report of one between Histon and Girton a few years ago. I must admit, we didn't bother to investigate because we thought this was silly. But they were very difficult to get the last few. To get the last few, there was a bonus system. The trappers didn't get paid until they got the last one and this sort of thing. It was quite difficult in the end. There is a project actually just starting to get a mink-free East Anglia.
Because I was surprised, Peter, for you to say that there are still mink on the loose today.
Oh, yeah, there are mink around.
So that the idea is now to try to eradicate them. After all, they're not natural to our habitats in East
Anglia.
Well,
in East Anglia, there's a move by a very recent group to start it in East Anglia. If it was to be successful, then it might conceivably be rolled out across the country. But this will take a lot of money. Well, actually, a fair amount of money, not a vast amount, but a lot of time and effort by enthusiasts. Going to take really hard work.
So for the otter, we're quite lucky, really, because we have the Fens, and
yes,
not far from us,
well.
And we can get out into Fens and observe these animals.
Well,
but having said what you said earlier on, they are very elusive.
Well, we can try to observe them is the way to look at it. I couldn't tell anybody now where to go and see an otter, except in the Shetlands or Ardnamurchan. I can tell people where they have been seen fairly often, like Fendrayton and Paxton Pits and Falmer and Wick and Fen, and I can tell people where there's a good chance of finding spraint if they wish to look at that and sniff it, because it's very distinctive. But I couldn't tell you where to go and see one in Cambridge with any degree of certainty.
On your website, Peter, or the Cambridgeshire Mammal Group's website, of which you are the chair, you have a wonderful PDF download available for people to have. And it is an atlas of mammals. Oh. And if you scroll down, you can find the otter. And what did amaze me was, for each genus, if you like, or each species, you've got a map of Cambridgeshire. And on there, you've got some really nice black pepper dots. And I say really nice because there are a huge number of these dots with sightings and locations.
No, they're... I should think 95% of those are signs.
Signs of?
I.e. spraint.
Right.
Or known footprints. If we did it on sightings, there would only be about two or three dots.
Oh.
But all the records in that atlas are signs and sightings. But for otters, they happen to be very largely signs. So those dots there are taken from exact grid references of where an otter sign was seen. I.e. spraint, footprints, or rarely sightings.
Now, a lot of people have got GPS devices. They're embedded in our smartphones, and so many of us have those anyway. It's very likely that we could probably get you an exact longitude, latitude, position. But the old-fashioned way, I suppose, let's say I'm marching along the 40-foot drain, Peter, and I'm out sort of towards Walney Way or somewhere between Erith and say, the Wash, and I come across something. Can I report it to you, and how would I do that if I can?
Well, at the moment, reporting on the website is via... Now, you've got it open, so you can show me where it is. Sightings across the top there. Sightings leads you to the iRecord webpage. So you put your sighting on the iRecord page, which goes to the national iRecord. We get downloads of sightings and signs from iRecord. We also get them from CPERC, which is the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough Environmental Records Centre. At Camborne, we also give them our reports, and they give us theirs as well, of otters and all the other mammals, wild mammals in the county.
If you want to see the website we're talking about, then it's camsmammalgroup.org.uk, all one word, for camsmammalgroup.org.uk, or put into your search engine, presumably. Yeah, I got there that way. Cambridgeshire Mammal. That will do. That will take you there. And if you want to contact Peter and the team, I've got an email address for you as well. It's camsmammal@gmail.com. Simple as that. It's all one word, camsmammal@gmail.com. You can find out more about what they do as a group. Peter is the training officer. Peter, we're running out of time, but we'll have to get you to come back in and tell us all about the training that you do.
Well, I can certainly do that. I particularly train on small mammal trapping, that's shrews, mice and voles, water vole surveying. We've got good water vole sites in Cambridgeshire. Cambridgeshire is probably the best county in the country for water voles. We do, as the picture on the website shows, harvest mice. We do harvest mice nest surveys. They are extremely difficult to find, but very handy. We also do badger set surveying. We're about to re-survey all the badger sets on our extremely large database. That's going to take a few months, I think. We've got a long way to go there, but we're going to redo that. And we train on various other things which I can't think of at the moment.
There's a whole host of them, I have to say, in the Atlas. I scrolled through at least 30 different mammals as species in the Mammal Atlas that you have online. Go and have a look at that as well.
The oddest thing on that is the fact that we have seals and visible in the middle of Cambridgeshire, apparently.
Did they get past Denver Sluice? Because that's the tidal limit.
They get right down to the Erith area and beyond.
See, how do they get into the fresh water below the tidal reaches of
no comment. The
River Great Ouse?
I don't think anybody's ever looked into it too much, but we do occasionally get signs, which is why they're in the Atlas.
Because it's happened. It is truly that it's not just an illusion.
I'm sure I read that there was one of them breeding on in the fen, more or less, in the last two or three years.
The grey seal?
Oh, I'm not sure which it was. I'm not a seal person.
My goodness.
I know they're mammals. Peter. I know they're mammals.
Peter, we have to end it there, but hopefully we can invite you back to talk about the mammal of the month or something.
Yes.
Would you like to do that?
Yeah, if
you've got some time.
Can I do a quick advert?
Go on.
All right, very quick advert. You mentioned CNHS, Cambridge Natural History Society. There's actually three talks on February the 20th at 6:45 in the David Attenborough building. There's three talks by my group. One is me on otters in Cambridgeshire. One is Joe Chesham on bats in the city, which includes an item on about street lighting effects on bats. And Carol Barber from Grafham is going to talk about a village project in Grafham to bring the community into looking after hedgehogs.
Peter, there we are. That's an advert which we don't mind doing at all. Peter Bilburn, there, is the chair of the Cambridgeshire Mammal Group and also their training officer. Peter, do come back and see us again soon.
Yes, we'll go.
We'll go. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. Cambridge 105 Radio.